Greetings from Newcastle here in the northeast of England. Matchroom Radio is back. I am your host, David Diamante, and we just couldn't start Fight Week up here without the main attraction. We're joined today by Lewis Ritson, who headlines Saturday night's show against Jeremias Ponce. Lewis, great to see you. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Good to be back in here. Good to see you, Dave. All the better for seeing you, Dave. That's what I should say.
Yeah. Hey, I love seeing the beard, man.
I'm just joining the trend. You know, usually I'm nice and clean shaven, but no hair this time and a bit of facial. So done a bit of a swap, but I'm liking the style.
Yeah, I like it. It looks really good. You know, I tell you, it's been a strange year for everyone, and we know that. But one noticeable plus for Saturday's show is we're going to have fans back. You know, all 1,000 tickets sold instantly. You know, you could have sold out the venue several times over yourself. How many friends and family members were part of the lucky ones that got tickets?
Quite a few didn't, to be fair. But, you know, the people that you want to be there have got them. As soon as I only knew it was 1,000 tickets, I was straight on my manager. Give us that 1,000. We need them. And obviously said, oh, no boxes are getting tickets. So, you know, I was told them, get on the link straight away, they're going to go. So probably 50-50, but fans are fans and they're going to make some noise.
Oh, they're going to make some noise. You know, I mean, look, it's only going to be 1,000 fans, but the Geordies are known for just being such a such a spirited group and some of the best fans in the world, really. What do you think that is?
It's just passion, isn't it? You know, like we're all from, especially myself, I'm actually from Newcastle. I'm a couple of miles away from the city centre, so I'm a Newcastle lad. You know, I love the football. You know, I had a season ticket for 10 to 12, yeah. I'm just one of their own, and luckily Newcastle have jumped on board, and like I say, we're back our own, and we're a passionate bunch.
I mean, NUFC, obviously you wear the black and white colours on your trunks always, and Alan Shearer, I mean, he's like a god up here.
Yeah, you know, he couldn't watch us against the Patera fight. Look, it didn't go our way, but we've kept in touch. He always sends us the WhatsApp messages. Good luck for tonight, mate. Hope the train's going well. So he keeps in touch. And like I say, he is guard up here, hasn't he? AS9 and a Premier League all-time leading goal scorer. So if we can even be a part of what he brings to the city, then we'll be happy.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, this pitch is different than any other really in England that I can think of, because it's just right in the city centre, right? It's kind of like all roads lead to...
Yeah, well, I think, quite funnily, out of all the Premier League clubs, St. James's Park is the actually only one that's bang in the centre of the city. So everything leads in, everything leads out to the ground. So, you know, the Geordies are just one big friendly bunch of people. We'll all stick together, and it's nice to be from the port. Nice to be from this city, because that's what we're all about.
Well, like you just said, that these people here are very, very friendly, and I'd like to make a quote now about the city. What I think, it is the warmest, coldest city in England.
Yeah, no, it could be something like this 1 minute, and the next it's absolutely lashing down. So it's you're quite right about that. But there's no better city in England than Newcastle.
Yeah, sure. So tell me, what was it like growing up here?
Growing up, you know, you get your rough and your nice place and your rough places, don't you? It's Newcastle. It's a lower class city, really. You know, we've all got to work to make our ends up here, and lower class, middle class people. But that's what makes all one. Like, we're just one big unit, aren't we? And you see, we're a very friendly, passionate bunch, and I think that's just the way it is up here.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I do. We've got a few. You know, I've got two proper sisters, a sister that's adopted, and then a brother and a sister, another sister.
So this is a big family.
Got a big family, yes. All grown up in one house, four sisters, one brother. Brother was obviously moved out when he was 18, but so I was outmatched in the house. But as the only brother, it was hard. Like, sticking up for four sisters, it gets hard.
Were there a lot of scraps in the street?
A lot.
Really?
Oh, yes, yeah, a lot. You know, I've been through my fair share of bumps and bruises outside the ring, but it's one thing that the boxing brings is a bit discipline, isn't it? And it's brought that to my life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know your dad, Davey, great guy, and I was able to hang out with him again today. But every fight week, you know, that I see you and,
you know,
and
your pops. He always mentions, I'll be able to see my mate Dave, you know, he likes hanging out with himself, he loves it, so he loves fight week, he loves being a part of it.
Yeah, he's really passionate also. What did your folks do for a living?
Do you know, my dad, when I was young, I was just a bricklayer, you know, he had his big red van, Forest Old Building Services, everyone used to do it. That's your dad driving that big red van. It was terrible. And my mum just used to work part-time in Morrison's on the checkout counter. You know, we were not a well-off family. You know, like, just had to, like everyone else in Newcastle, really make ends meet with what we had.
And was your dad a big boxing fan? Or where did the love of boxing come in? Was it from those scraps in the street that you talk about?
Yeah, well, my dad, he's got a massive family. He had 14 uncles. One of my uncles is really well known as Roly Poly Ritson in the town. He was a heavyweight boxer. Oh,
Roly Poly Ritson.
Yes, Roly Poly Ritson. Larry Ritson, he was a boxer, and he got to a few ABA heavyweight finals. My dad had a few fights as well. So just as one big family, really. And all my uncles had big, rough, tough names up from Annis Fordway, where they live, and just really come from that.
So was it that you looked up to them, or did they kind of push you into it?
No, you know, my dad gave us a chance when I was 6 or 7. Do you want to come to the gym with me one day? He runs his own gym, said yes, and never looked back, really, and never had the chance to, because he wouldn't let us, really. So, but you got to, I loved it. As soon as I went in there, we used to, me and a couple of lads, God rest his soul, Dale Clark, who's passed away, he got cancer and died. We used to, in the minute breaks, go outside and used to spar when people weren't watching when we had just started, and we used to come back in with pop noses, and we'd used to go mental. But once you get that bug, you just kind of just doesn't leave.
Yeah, for sure. But I know you love the footy, as you were saying. You've had season tickets to UFC forever, and did you ever play football? Was that ever like a consideration possibly, or it was boxing?
No, you played football at a really high level. Old End Boys Club, top team in the Northeast, played for them 7-8. Yeah, got scouted by a few Scottish teams. Newcastle scouted me, but it was always the boxing for me. Football was just something I used to run as a boxer when I was an amateur. So the football was my way of doing the running and doing a bit of road work.
What position did you play?
Center half.
I love that. Someone broke my balls the other day because I called it sweeper, and they were like, "What's a sweeper?" But that's what we call like a halfback, yeah, you know, midfield.
Yeah, you used to get stuck in, like I say, sweeper, center half, and used to love playing football, really. But it gets to a point where you get to a certain age, you start picking up a few more injuries, and it's one or the other, and boxing. That's when I picked boxing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, were you? Yeah, you have to choose one at a certain point. Were you a good student?
No, I wasn't a good student. I got excluded a few times for fighting. Expelled as well. But now back in, I had a. It's just one of them things when people know you're a boxer and you can sort of, you're a rough, tough lad yourself, you can hide yourself. It sort of brings when you, especially when younger, brings a bit more trouble from other schools and other students and stuff. So. Got to do quite a few scrapes at school, but live and learn, don't you? Not that kid anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it can go one of two ways. Either you get a reputation, no one wants to mess with you, or the really tough guys, they want to test themselves against you.
Yeah, you definitely get a bit of both, but luckily it soon got to an age where no one really wanted to test enough for a while. So with me, it was when I was in school, it wasn't sort of fighting with school lads. I was fighting with kids outside of school who were a lot older than me. Even got excluded from school for 4 weeks of having a fight with a full grown bloke on my lunch break at 15. So, the bloke was a big lad, 6-foot-odd, sorted him out and then didn't really get much trouble after that. So, it goes one of each way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really can. You know, it's funny because let me ask, what are a lot of these fights over?
Do you know, there's a lot of these fights when you're younger and stuff and people know you're a boxer, not really anything to actually do with you sticking up for people or,
okay,
you know, people are getting bullied and leave him alone and stuff like that. So I used to have a bit of a name in the school for if you were getting bullied, go to Lewis and he would sort it out for you. You know, like, I'd bully the bullies, really.
Yeah.
Stay away, leave him alone. So a lot of it come down to that, but, and you've got four sisters, where you've got to keep he's done this to us, he said that to us, right? No more, I've got to go and sort this trouble out. So a bit of both, really, but It's life, isn't it?
It's life. You know, because I've known you for a few years now, and you're just the nicest guy that anyone could ever want to meet outside the ring. But you have that spite inside the ring. You know, you can really be a mean SOB between the ropes, which I like. Yeah. And where do you think that comes from? I mean, do you have any pent up anger issues that, that you just, you know, you focus when you get in there?
No, I just, to me, boxing, you can either, it's obviously, we know it's a sport, a noble sport where people like the boxing move and slip, or some people like to get in there and get stuck in. And, you know, to me, boxing's fighting where I believe it should be. If you're there to fight, you're there to fight, and that's the style I bring, and that's the way I believe boxing should be. And the inner demon comes out to saying, that's where it comes from.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just remembering the fight we did here in October of 2019 against Robbie Davies Jr. Man, that was a cracker, man.
No, it was good. You know, that's the first time I really, in a fight, had a bit of animosity towards Robbie, and he had a bit towards me. And it was the first time in my career where, you know, it was make or break. Had to beat Robbie. And I think it was the same for him, really. And we both just put it all on the line and didn't want to get beat.
I mean, it was a hell of a fight. If the fans out there listening haven't seen that fight, I'd say, you know, they should watch it if they could YouTube it or something. But I love both of you guys, you know. Yeah. And Liverpool v. Newcastle, Newcastle v. Liverpool, whatever you want to say. It was a hell of a fight. And Robbie's super tough, just as you are. He's a hard man. And it was a closely contested contest. I mean, you came out with a unanimous decision win. But, man, what a fight it was.
Yeah. Well, not many people know that the uncle who I was on about, Roly-Poly, actually boxed Robbie Davies' dad.
His pops, yeah. His dad was an Olympian.
In the ABA final.
Right.
In the ABA heavyweight final. And Robbie's dad beat my uncle. Gave him a bit of a hard fight, actually. Gave him a bit of a hiding. So a bit of family revenge was on the line. So,
man.
Yeah, had to do it. Had to do it for my uncle, you know what I mean? But, it was good. But the whole city got behind us with that. And, you know, it was a great rivalry. You know, the two cities, Liverpool got behind him, Newcastle got behind me, and added that bit of spice for the fight of the night.
Yeah, it really did. It was wonderful. And like you said, the fans really did love it. I mean, I want to talk about, just for a second, your last fight with Miguel Vasquez, just in a little bit of more detail, and kind of the differences between fighting behind closed doors and fighting with fans, because you're so used to having some of the best fans in the game, really anywhere, to be honest. Do you think that made any type of difference in the fight? Or, I mean, and when was it that you realized, like, hey, this is different fighting behind closed doors? And I know the styles maybe didn't gel so well either.
Yeah, it was the whole the styles. I think it was all of that put together, really. We fought. I had never watched Vasquez fight before, and I fought Mexican. This kid's going to come fight, Last Chance Saloon. And after three or four rounds, slowly, realized, he isn't going to stand here and fight me. He's, and I sort of got stuck in the mud with, should I go forward? Should I wait for him? What should I do? And me thinking, either one of them just made me do nothing. I was just sort of just stuck. But I was on that ramp, and usually when the Blading Races plays, the whole place is jumping. And obviously in the bubble, Blading Races coming. It was just like you could drop a pin. You could hear a pin drop. There was just no atmosphere. I was thinking, I know nobody's here, but this is bizarre. This is just so quiet, and so just felt it was just horrible. It just wasn't me at all. And I think that did have a bigger part play. But look, Vasquez come and he done what he had to do, and he boxed very, very well on the night.
Yeah, I want to talk just a little bit about the mental aspect of the game. You know, obviously at this level, everyone's physically at a certain level, but I mean, some people better than others, but you guys are all great athletes. Yeah. But the mental aspect is really tough, and in a fight like that, I mean, you obviously, you read and you can hear what people say. Yeah. You got the W, but, like, you know, a lot of people thought you lost a fight. I know that you've said you said you got a gift decision, which I think is a very big thing for a fighter to say and to own up to it. And the thing is, though, obviously it's not your fault. Like, you went in and you fought, right? You're not a judge. You're a boxer. And the cookie crumbles many different ways at different times in boxing. There are a lot of guys get a lot of bad breaks. So sometimes when you get a good break, but at the same time, you know, I've said this many times before, sometimes a win can be a loss, and sometimes a loss can be a win. Like, for example, when Timothy Bradley beat Pacquiao the first time they fought. When he actually didn't beat him, he actually lost to him, but the judges gave him the W. And it really adversely affected him. Conversely, Paulie Malignaggi, when he fought Miguel Cotto, he lost that fight. Yeah. But it was such a valiant effort. He kind of won. That really raised his stock. So that's what I mean when I say a win can be a loss. A loss can be a win. Yeah. How did you deal with that? How have you dealt? This is really the first fight back since then.
Definitely. Well, you know, the first thing first, deactivated the Twitter. Just went, well, right.
You did.
Yeah, that's me off. That's me off social media for a while. I mean, my niece, she's 10 years old. Well, she's 11 now. My niece, but she's. Deaf, she got 2 hearing aids in, but even people were messaging her, giving her stick about me. And I was thinking, come on, this is like 11-year-old girl, yeah, you know, like. So at first I was getting the writing answers back to people, yeah, you know, like, and I was thinking, come on, Lewis, you know, like, this is not you. Stop writing, just deactivate your social media for a while, come back, go back to the drawing board, see what we're going to do. Obviously, changing trainer back with my dad now, fresh start, and that's the way we'll just take it from a nice fresh start. You know, your next fight's going to be a tough one. Let's just get in the gym, just grind it out, just forget about all that. And then when you're ready to go back on social media, go on it, but just don't be as vocal as what you usually are. Just take a backward step still. And that's what we've done, and just, it feels nice. I feel nice and relaxed. You know, I'm off that now. Well, I'm on it, but I say the odd comments, I might share the odd thing Matchroom do, but that's all I use it for now. Just go on it to promote yourself. Don't go on it for anything else. And it's like you say, mentally you've got to sometimes just one step backward to go 2 steps forward.
It's amazing how you can go like from hero to zero, and it's not even your fault.
No, yeah. I mean, even in the city of Newcastle, I mean, I got a lot of stick from people from Newcastle. And even people from my hometown, Forest Hall, I mean, like, the Forest Hall pages on the Facebook, people arguing with each other left, right and centre, saying, obviously, Lewis is crap, he didn't win. And then people are saying, he's from Forest Hall, we should be defending him, come on, let's get behind him.
Sure.
So even Forest Hall wasn't like, in a fifth, that's from my hometown, do you know what I mean, where I'm from, where you're a bit of a local hero yourself, you walk around, everyone wants to get a photo, everyone wants to say hello to you. But when it comes to the social media side, everyone's going to stab us in the back, where I had put a post out saying, I'd seen a few people that had done it who I bump into daily. I see he's walking about, and then I thought to myself, God, Disney, I shouldn't have put that really, because these are people that buy tickets at the end of the day. And I've seen quite a few of them that were giving a stick on the Twitter and the Facebook, and how is it going, Lewis? Oh, you'll be back next time. I think that's what you weren't saying on social media. You were saying the company, obviously, but you don't want to say nothing. Just go, yep, yeah, go up, hold your hands up. You were right, got a bit of a gift, but I just got to be better on the next fight.
You find out who your true friends are real quick, right?
100%, especially in this sport. Like you say, you go from zero to hero real quick. Like even if I win on Saturday by an explosive performance, you'll still have people writing on there, oh, but you didn't do this against Vasquez, you didn't do this against Patera. You're in a lose-lose situation all the time as a boxer. That's my opinion, because no matter how good you perform, you're always going to have their people there giving you a bit sick.
How do you feel about that? Does that make you not like the game more, or does it light a fire to fight harder and to prove that you can do this? Like how do you move forward with it? How do you come to terms with that in your head?
I think to come to terms with it is just what I was just mentioning, why just taking a backward step. It's like I always say, you're never ever going to get rid of it, no matter how good you are, no matter how good your performances are. You're always going to have that person, that fake picture, that fake profile name, who you're never going to see in your life, is going to give you a stick. It's going to personally abuse you, really, like online abuse, isn't it? It doesn't matter what you say to them, I'll block them, they'll just make a new account and come back on. So I think you just got to, you've always got to have that fire in your belly anyway as a fighter, because you always want the next prize, don't you? You always want to, you know, if you have Abby Ponce, the next fight could possibly be for a world title. So the fire's always lit. If you win the next one, you win a world title, you know, you've got a defence to make, so that fire's always in there. Just certain things, you've just got to go take a backward step from that and just leave it to one side.
Yeah, sure. I mean, speaking of the Timothy Bradley Pacquiao fight, the first one they had, they fought 3 times, obviously, but the first time they fought, his next performance, man, was like an epic fight against Ruslan Provodnikov.
Yeah, I remember that was unbelievable, wasn't it? And he showed a lot of critics wrong, didn't he, with his chin, with his heart and his desire on that fight. But he was still getting people saying, you rob Manny Pacquiao. Like I say, we're in a lose-lose situation all the time, really.
Well, it's true. And, you know, that was then, this is now. So, okay, you've got a tough opponent in front of you. Jeremias Ponce, he's undefeated, 27-0. And this guy, he's won a lot of titles, smaller titles, yep. Right? But he does have the IBO World Championship, but Argentinian champ, South American champ. He's won IBF, smaller IBF stuff, WBA stuff. How much do you know about him?
Just what I've seen on YouTube, really, which is hard to get a, because obviously he's been fighting people at 140, but they've been coming up with a lower weight to fight him. So just what we've seen, him likes to come forward, likes to have a bit of a fight, punches and bunches, got a decent jab himself, not scared to throw the body shots when he gets in there. I've seen him drop a few people with body shots on the YouTube, but I have seen that he's there to be hit and he's there to get hurt himself. I've seen him drop a few times in a few fights and hurt in a few fights, and I think if he's going to stand there in front of me and take fully blown punches, I think he will get hurt.
That's what you're expecting, that he's going to be right there?
I'm going to expect, yeah. I've seen a few interviews and heard a few interviews where he's saying that he's confident of knocking us out. So I'm hoping that is his plan. He is going to come, he is going to bring it, and we're going to be in a bit of a bomb bust. That's what we think.
So you won't have to go looking for him?
No, I don't think we have to go looking for him, and I don't think he'll have to go looking for us.
You guys can step right in the phone booth and sort it out.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of fight we like, you know, and we've done that with Robbie, we've done it with Scotty Cordle, we've done it with a few fighters, and we've always come off the best when that happens, so hopefully we can do that again Saturday.
Yeah, that's the kind of fight we like to see too sometimes, and I think Saturday we're going to definitely see some fireworks. You know, he's never fought outside of his native Argentina. And I don't think he'll ever have experienced the Geordie crowd. I'm wondering if you think that could play a part, maybe an intimidation factor. Although I do want to say, I've spent a lot of time in Argentina. I don't know if you've been there before, but if you ever go to see like the Boca Juniors play.
I've heard all about it. I know a lad who had a Muay Thai fight over there, and he says, he went over there to fight and he was getting spat at, stuff chucked him on the ring, walk, everything. He's never been in a more hostile crowd than that before in his life. So I'm expecting the crowd to play its part, but we're at a level now where I don't think he'll be intimidated by it, but he'll know they're there. And every shot I hit him with, you'll hear the crowd roar. You know that he's being hit. And I think that's going to play into my hands a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be really exciting to see. The Argentinian fans are really intense also. And there used to be, if there's anyone out there listening down in Argentina, Luna Park, man. That was one of my favorite places to see fights. It's a beautiful arena in Buenos Aires. They don't have boxing there anymore, unfortunately, but I saw several fights there. And what a place. Great, great atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, he's going, from being from Argentina himself, he's going to be a rough, tough lad, isn't he? So We're expecting a rough, tough fight, to be fair. He likes to put the head in. We've seen that. He likes to put the elbows in. He's not scared to get rough on the inside. So one thing we'll be telling the referees to watch for the head, because he does like to come in with that. So we've done a bit of homework on him, and it's going to be an exciting fight.
You know, on Saturday, there's one line that the fans are going to hear me say when I introduce you, and that is the Sandman. That's your nickname, the Sandman, and I guess that comes from, you know, putting people to sleep, right? The old fairy tale, the children's fairy tale. Is that where you got the name?
No, do you know what it is? Right, we had a he's sadly passed away as well. God rest his soul. We used to have a lad come to the gym called Davey Gardner, who was a really renowned tough man in Newcastle, football hooligan, and his son used to come to my dad's gym, and he won an ABA title with Burtley as well. Actually, you end up going to Burtley. But you come in with a pair of shorts one day that had the Sandman on and give us them. And I had said, oh, thank you. Obviously, thank you. What's that for? And he says, oh, that was my name in jail, was the Sandman, because you used to have long blonde hair. I went, oh, yes. And I says, well, what's made you put them on? He says, oh, you remind me of me when I was younger. He says, there you go. And that name stuck with us ever since.
I'm so glad I asked you that, because that's a really interesting story. Yeah. And it's not for putting people to sleep, although you do put people to sleep. But that's not what it is. But that's a great story.
Yeah, no, not a lot of people know that. You know, they always say that, is it because you put people to sleep? And I say, no, it's because obviously everyone from the town, the West End, they'll know the bloke that I'm talking about. Obviously, he's not longer with us anymore, but he was the same. He had 14 kids himself. And he had one of them, Django, you call them. He won an ABA title for Burtley. He's not boxing anymore, but yeah, that's what we got the name. It's a nice little story when people ask.
It is. Did you ever think about coming into Metallica's Enter Sandman?
No, that's not my type of music. I like the old classics. So no, I didn't think about coming. I've had a few requests of people making remixes and sending them on the online saying, coming to this next, coming to that, but No, I've got to be the Bleeding Races for me.
Yeah, you came in, didn't you come into the Jam one time?
I came to the Jam, that used to be my amateur, the Jam of Town Called Malice. I used to like a bit of the Jam.
Great song.
But, you know, the Jody fans got on board with us, so had to give them the Bleeding Races.
Yeah, what was I going to say? Rick Butler was the drummer for the Jam, and he used to play Premier Drums. I was a drummer, so
there's usually a concert at a place called Time Out in Newcastle. I don't know if you've been. It's a lovely little village, and the lead singer from the Jam, who's by himself now, he's a solo artist. He comes every couple of years, and he does a few songs every year. But I haven't been myself, but I've been told it's really good. So I'll have to get myself along there and listen to him sing a town called. Town Called Malice.
Oh, that'd be killer. So you like the classics. You like, who else do you like?
Do you know what it is? I like a bit of Billy Joel, like a bit of Elvis. I like Elvis. I like all the classics. I really am a bit laid back when it comes to me music, you know. So it's Billy Ocean, like a bit of Billy Ocean. I like all that. Sam Cooke, is it? I like him. So like stuff like that. Bit of Motown.
Did you see that movie One Night in Miami recently?
No, I haven't seen it.
And they got Sam Cooke in it. It's very interesting. Yeah. Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, Sam Cooke.
Great thing. I love it. Love him.
Absolutely. Well, you do have a regular ring walk song, though. And I think everyone knows it. And that's the Newcastle United anthem. And I'll tell you, you know, the crowd going, tune, tune. You know, it's just, you get chills up the spine. It's one of the best things in sports.
You know what it is? We've had it for when the crowds have been in the arena for the free fights have been, yeah, and it just seems to get louder each time. You know, like, it seems to go quiet and the tune starts and just the whole crowd just seems to go mental, really, and it sends shivers down your spine, do you know what I mean? It does, and everyone in boxing talks about it, and I'm glad that, like, we're a part of it, and it's got something to do with the Jody fans.
It's nothing like it, man. Unreal. And, I mean, you know, the dream, I guess, was St. James Park. You know, we talked about St. James Park a little bit, but that was the dream. I mean, could you just imagine, I mean, one day fighting at 52,000 capacity?
52,000 people singing tune, like, it would be absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, we've got to get past Ponce and maybe win a world title and get a defence there. But if we could ever do it, it would be goosebumps.
It would definitely be goosebumps. There's no doubt about it. I mean, people talking about that. Do you think that it was premature? Was put a lot of pressure on you back then when you were talking about that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, warned about it earlier on in the day when we had that little run at lightweight where we were doing quite well and Lomachenko and RS. People like that were getting mentioned. You know, like, quite funny when you haven't even won a British title outright and then names are getting chucked at you. And I sort of just got carried away in the full hype, you know. Just, I went from not trying to knock people out, even though I was, to then trying to knock people out and they're not really coming. Just need to be a little bit more relaxed and just, you know, just didn't, the training went to pot really. I just started training myself, telling my dad what I wanted to do. Just got carried away in the full hype, but, you know, I do believe that we're nearly there. We're a lot closer to it than what people might think or what people think our ability is, but I believe I can get there.
The king right now, 140, is obviously Josh Taylor. Yep. And, I mean, we got to take our hats off to him. Yep. What a fight against Jose Ramirez.
He's special, special talent, isn't he? And, like, you get one of them every 50, 60 years, don't you? Like, just come around and he seems he can do a bit of everything, can't he? So I'm hoping he just does the right thing and moves up and wait and fights Terence Crawford and leaves them belts vacant for the rest of us 140-pounders to have a bit of a shot at them.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you, like, what do you think he should do? I mean, I think that his mandatory for WBO is Jack Catterall. Yeah. But what would you do? I mean, you know, obviously you could say he's cleared out the division. Would you say he should move up?
Yeah, well, I think when you've got all the belts, there's nothing else to prove. There's nothing else to beat. He's beat the two. You've had two top guys at 140 in pro grade, and Ramirez has beat them, hasn't he? So it's like his two biggest challenges at 140 he's done. So I think for me, and every 140 pound, I was saying, get that fight with Terence Crawford and leave them belts alone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, look, Josh achieved his dream, you know, to become undisputed world champion. And when you first started boxing, your dream is to become British champion.
Yeah, you know, we had no GB, no Olympics, no funding. You know, it was just me, my dad, amateur. And I wasn't even meant to turn pro, really. I was just working away at the time. Got a phone call off Billy Nelson, who I'd done a few rounds spawn with Ricky Burns, and he just, do you want to turn pro? And I was working away a little bit sick, and I just went, right, go on then. Yeah, I will. And he went, all right, I've got you on the Newcastle show in 6 weeks on the card of Anthony Joshua. Blow my neck. I was like, miles overweight, not really training at the time, but took me chance. And when I first started, was to win a British title. And now we've sort of done that quite easily, and we're just looking at the bigger steps.
Well, I mean, you did it in a destructive way. In fact, to be honest, first of all, the belt is on your dad's mantle. Yeah. Well, actually, it's not now because your dad just moved.
Yes.
It's in a box. but it will be on your dad's mantle. He's actually making a case for all your belts. but it'll be on the mantelpiece. And for those that don't know, the Lord Lonsdale belt, you can tell, you have to defend it three times, yeah?
Yeah, you've got to win it and defend it three times. And I think we've done it in 8 months or something.
Well, I think you did it in, if I'm not mistaken, record amount of rounds. Not time, but in record amount of rounds. Because I think it was like 11 rounds, if I'm not mistaken, when you won it and then defended it three times in 11 rounds.
Yes, yeah, we're done. Do you know, we fought Joe Murray, ex-Olympian, for a title defense. Scotty Cardle, ex-British champion, ex-GB member. And Paul Hyland, who was undefeated and was part of the Irish squad for years. You know, we didn't have an easy run at them defenses.
And Robbie Barrett, too.
And right? Robbie Barrett, yeah, who had beat Scotty Cardle. You know, the two voluntaries, Murray and Cardle, don't think many people in the country would have given them the voluntary defenses that I give, because they're very, very hard fights on paper. And we were expecting hard fights, but we sort of went through that role where whoever were touched just seemed to fall to the floor.
Man, just, it was a great time. Yep. Flying high.
Flying high, yeah. And that's where we want to get, you know, you get to a certain level where it doesn't matter who you hit on the chin, they're not going to go anywhere. But, like, we still need to put in them explosive performances, them good performances where, oh, Ritson didn't knock his opponent out, but what a 12-round fight. A bit like the Robbie Davis, what a 12-round fight that was.
Oh, great fight.
We want to watch him again. And that's, I believe, Ponce, it's going to be that sort of fight.
You know, speaking of that belt being on your dad's mantelpiece, I know that he is so proud of you. He really is. Is that, how much of a driving force is that for you?
Massive. You know, like, I'm just a family man. Me, I don't go out on the drink. I haven't had a fight for six or seven years now. Literally, I'm in the gym, and if I'm not in the gym, it's all about family. I can sell thousands of tickets, but I could probably count on one hand how many friends I've got, because I haven't got that many, because it's just literally, I'm back home to my daughter. What do you want to do the day? We want to do this, we want to do that. And, you know, my dad is my best mate, really. I do everything with him. I'm in the gym with him twice a day. He lives 2 minutes away from my house. Like, I bought his house off him. He's moved. He's in his house, and it's literally a 2-minute walk. So it's like, for him to be there, and, you know, it's like, I love boxing, but if I broke my hand tomorrow and couldn't fight again, I wouldn't be devastated. I wouldn't be, oh, I can't box. Right, I've got a good daughter, I've got another one on the way. There's plenty I can do with my life. Whereas my dad's been and breathed this sport for nearly 40 odd years. So every belt I win, really, just, that's yours. You know, and he loves it.
And you left Neil Fannin at Hartlepool to train back with your dad.
Yeah.
Was part of it because of what happened with Vasquez?
Yeah, quite a bit of it was, but do you know, like, Neil got a lot of criticism himself after the fight. He got a load, and it's a fight I didn't like that either. I was feeling a bit bad for him getting all the stick he was getting because it was through me. Like, wasn't really both for fault. Well, he was getting a bit sick for his corner work, but for the way the fight went and stuff, and it was just, sometimes you got to think to yourself, I'm just going to get you out of this position, you know, like, and luckily, you know, my dad's, he's not bothered, you can say anything to my dad.
No.
You know, he's that laid back, so, but I come home after the Vasquez fight, I haven't watched it back, and I had said to my dad, look, he seen the fight, he went, yep, I've watched it 5 or 6 times, I went, yes, he says, I can give you the truthful, or you can just be true. He went, no, you definitely got beat, son. Hit us with a few points, and I thought, yeah, you know, maybe I should be back with you. He was the only person out of everybody that told us about Vasquez's lateral movement, how he likes to, and I just kept saying, no, he's going to come have a go with us, he's going to come have a go with us. And every week I was coming back, he was going, lateral movement, it's this way, it's that way, he's throwing shots, yeah, and have a man, just come on. And then
it's what happened.
Yeah,
can I ask you, because you and this is not to throw anyone of the, I'm curious,
yeah,
because when we were talking about this just a little bit earlier at the beginning of the conversation, you were talking about like in round 3-4 then you realize like, hey, there's a problem here,
yeah,
and you were kind of stuck in the mud because you weren't sure, do I go forward, do I switch up plans? What was happening in the corner? Like, is that in a fight, usually is it your corner saying, Lewis, listen, we got to switch this up? Or is it you yourself saying, look, it's time for plan B? Because, you know, I want to hear what you have to say, but a lot of times there's a lot of fighters that are very good, okay? Yeah. They're good fighters. But to be a great fighter, you have to make those adjustments, yeah, right? So how does that work in your head or in your fights? Does, like I said, is it you? Is it your corner? Is it a combination?
No, well, it used to be just the corner, but now, like, we've sort of, when I've come back now, me and my dad have spoke about it, saying, like, maybe Varson, it's not working. Maybe you should just try your own way now and go, right, well, I know this is not working, I'm going to try it myself. Where, as a bloke, I have so much respect for Neil. Like, you know, he's been a great bloke for me for 2 years when I was down Hartlepool. It was like, it's Neil's, we are nowhere. He's the boss. If he tells you to do something, you've got to do it. And that was the sort of mind frame. Like, never in a fight have I come back to the corner ever and kept saying, am I winning this? Am I winning? Because I knew myself, warning signs would go, am I winning this? Am I winning this?
I've always said, if you have to ask a question, you already know the answer. Yes, if you're asking, it's probably the answer is no.
And I think from probably round 4 to the, I must have asked every round, am I winning this?
Yeah.
And you keep doing what you're doing, keep doing what you're doing. And I think to myself, well, I know this is not working. And I can tell, you know, like, the alarm bells were starting to ring with me dad, Mick Morrison, who was the other coaches, Mick Morrison, you need to chuck that backhand, you need to chuck. My dad was sort of, this isn't working, son, and I'm saying to Neil, this is not throwing Neil under the bus at all, because I love Neil as a bloke, and he's, just keep doing what you're doing, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I know myself this isn't working, but you're the head coach, I'm listening, you know, like, where,
sure,
I know now where that should probably be a bit. If you think it's not working, change it. You know, like,
yeah,
you gotta
follow your gut.
You
man.
Gotta follow your gut, and that's what makes good fighters and great fighters, doesn't it? Where it's all right, me saying, yeah, but I was listening to the coach, but it's like you're saying, yeah, but you knew yourself it wasn't working, so you've only got yourself to blame, really. Which I have. You know, I should have just Vasquez's style. I'm gonna take it off you. I'm gonna wait for you. I'm gonna wait for you to come forward to me, and you might have come forward, but you wouldn't have been losing the rounds. You would have been busy with the job, trying to make him come on. And that's one of the biggest things I've took from that fight is, if it's not working, change it.
Yeah, that's a big lesson in life, man, yep, is to listen to your gut. And it's not just as a fighter, but just in life.
You know, yeah, 100%, you know yourself. If you were working with a matchroom and you know it didn't work, but it's a job, you want to keep it. That good feeling, say, I'm not happy here.
No.
Then you've got to go. There's a time when you've got to go, right, that's it, I'm done. And that's what I should have done that fight. I mean, I was saying, just before the first lockdown, Neil gave us 4 weeks off, and I was 4 weeks at home with my daughter, and I loved it. I was happy as out then. I got the phone call, and I think the Vasquez fight's back on. It's time to come back in the camp. And really, my gut feeling should have been, I should have said to Neil then, that's it, Neil, I'm staying home. And I didn't, and I thought, well, I've got the Vasquez fight. I'll have the Vasquez fight and see how it goes, and then maybe if we win that, then maybe I could stay with Neil and try and work things out back home. And then it just didn't work. That went back to Hartlepool and just wasn't happy. You know, like, I went from spending all days with my daughter where I'm training, going back to my flat, staying at four walls all day, going back to the gym, coming back and staying at the same four walls. Where there has to be a point where you've got to say to yourself, trust your gut feeling, yeah, and if you want to go home, man, go home.
Another change that you've made recently is a strength and conditioning coach.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that, and how do you feel it gets helped you?
Yeah, you know, it was quite funny. I sort of had left Neil and the strength and conditioning coach I had. I'd just been working with the Olympic Swedish team, cross-country team over there. And he had just messages out the blue on the social media saying, oh, look, I've come back from Sweden. Obviously, the university, he works at the university, he's got a master's and a PhD. He went, oh, the university's on full lockdown, so I've got a bit of time. I had seen in an interview that you don't have a strength and conditioner. Maybe we should try and give it a go. And I went, right, let's go. I'm open for you. Because I didn't used to lift weights, didn't used to do anything like that. And I felt the benefit massively. You know, usually I'm very flat, not much definition. I've come to finish camp, yeah, first time I've got like a little bit of a six pack. Not a big one, but a little bit of a one. A little bit more toned, a little bit more defined. And I feel like I'm hitting harder and stronger than ever. So hopefully on Saturday night that shows.
And you touched on this before, but that's not the only change in your life. You have another daughter on the way.
Yeah, I have another daughter on the way. So I've got another little daughter, Darcy, who's three. And that was another reason for leaving, come back home. You know, my girlfriend's type 1 diabetic. The first pregnancy that she had with her first daughter was horrific, terrible. Steroid eye injections, operation on her stomach. She got brought in 8 weeks early, had the child 8 weeks early, preeclampsia. And obviously she sat us down and went, oh, look, Lewis, I'm pregnant again. If you want to stay in Hartlepool, you can, but I would prefer you be back home because obviously the first pregnancy. And that was just another decision where as soon as I knew she was pregnant, it just hit the nail on the head where, right, time to come home and be here for the family.
Well, speaking of changes and speaking of your girlfriend, Samantha, you have proposed to her.
Yeah, proposed. So now
that's big news.
Yeah, fiance. So
yeah.
It only took us 7 years. She kept. she said, after 3 years, you said you would propose to her. So I was four years too late. But yeah, she's happy and home life's never been better. I'm happy. And that was another thing. I was leaving for Hartlepool. And my daughter was getting to the age where she knew I wouldn't be back for the week. So she was crying all the like. Wouldn't talk to her, so my partner works on a Sunday, so I would have the Ben all day Sunday. She would come back and the Ben wouldn't talk to us, and I was like, what's the matter? Oh, you're going away tomorrow.
She knew
you're going away
kids
tomorrow.
Kids know
and,
Darcy's smart.
Yeah, she's a smart yeah. girl, so yeah, you're going away tomorrow, I'm not your friend. And it was like, I'm getting up on a Monday morning.
Oh, it's gotta
before
hurt.
She goes in the nursery and, can I have a kiss, darling? I'm going, I'll not see you till Saturday. And no kisses were coming, no cuddles.
Yeah.
No, I'm not your friend. And FaceTime now during the week and, oh, you're not, yeah, you're not. And it gets to a point where it plays on you a little bit, and that was for me, right, come on, time to go.
Oh, that's a killer.
No, it's horrible. It is, and I know, like, when I went and sat with Neil and told him, he said, well, I've got my son-in-law, he works on the rigs, he's got a daughter there, and it's like, yeah, but it's not the same, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm in a sport where I get punched for a living. He's in a sport where he's making thousands of pounds a week, working offshore. It's a bit of a difference, you know what I mean? So it's just choices in life, and you hit the nail on the head before when he said, it's all about that gut feeling. And if that gut feeling's telling you, then that's the right choice to make.
You know, Newcastle is obviously very famous for its brown ale. One of the very, very famous things here, right? It used to be on the jersey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone knows Newcastle. I think it was at one point in time the most imported British beer into America.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very popular. And as they say, a bit of the brown will put you down. So what made you stop drinking?
Jordan, I was just drinking. Getting a bit trouble in the town night when you go, like I was saying a bit before. And I had a drink on a New Year's Eve once. It was on a, it wasn't on New Year's Eve, sorry. It was at Joshua Fort Klitschko.
Which was almost like New Year's Eve.
Yes, so.
Yeah, just as festive.
Yes, and had a drink at my partner's brother's house. And I think I had to get carried out. by about five rounds. And I've never been so embarrassed before in my life. And then I just went, right.
That was it.
That was it.
Good for you.
Time hit the nail on the head. And I never used to drink much anyway, but that was just, right, not doing it again. And I haven't.
Good for you.
Yeah.
All right. The fans have so many questions for you. So I'm just going to pick a few here. Are you okay to answer some fan questions?
Yes, that's no problem at all.
Okay, let's see. Charlie Rice asks you. He says, I like the new hair-beard combo. Who inspired it?
Jonas, I was just it's been like the Northeast get out of jail clothes for the lockdown. You know, like, couldn't get a haircut. So everyone was just shaving their own hair, getting the beard long. And I've just followed the trend, so... No one inspired, really. The whole Northeast inspired everyone by setting it off, so I've just stuck with it.
I was hoping you were going to say Mr. T.
Mr. T.
All right. Let's see. Peter Hayward asks, we saw the McCormick brothers both qualify for the Olympics. With yourself, Cyrus Pattinson turning over, and a few others, Northeast boxing is in a healthy spot, isn't it?
Do you know, if the McCormacks can live up to the potential I have as an amateur, as pro, Cyrus, Callum French, Mark Dickinson just turned pro. The Northeast in 3 or 4 years is going to be the place to be for professional boxing. There'll be shows here, left, right, and centre. You know, like, we'll absolutely fly. And especially there, Burtley, Graham Rutherford's got to be a big shout out to him, because he's obviously training all the Burtley kids. But what a crop of lads he's got there. And if they can do the same potential and have the same ambitions as professional, then the Northeast is in a very, very healthy spot.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the McCormack brothers in the Olympics and what they do.
Yeah, well, especially with Pat just beating the lad that beat him last year in the final of this tournament. I think he was the number one seed, so Pat's going to be going there, number one seed, and you expect him to win gold. You'd expect Luke to at least medal, get a bronze, silver. Even he could win it. They're both really two top-class fighters, and you imagine two twins, two golds, turnover pro. What that would do for the Northeast for shows as well would be unbelievable.
It'd be unreal. Okay, let's see. Jelly Baby asks, what's your favorite cheese?
What's my favorite cheese?
little bit of a random one there.
You know, I'm either halloumi or a mature cheddar. You know, like, I like a bit of halloumi wrap.
Halloumi wrap, there
but
you
I
go.
I don't eat vegetables, so I don't eat salad, so it's a halloumi wrap by itself, but it's nice. But a bit like a mature cheddar or something.
Why don't you eat salad?
Do you notice I've never ate vegetables or salad since I was a young little boy? I really haven't, you know.
Straight caveman.
Caveman, that's a caveman diet. So, yeah, just meat. It's something that my mum used to let us get away with when I was little, so I've to this day still don't.
Oh man!
But the little man, she gets her Sunday dinner, and she knows I don't like vegetables, and she put a bit of broccoli on her fork and eat it if you love his dad. And after a couple of chews, and she's not looking, spit it out. And going, yeah, I've eaten it for you. So yeah, no, I never like the vegetables.
Oh man, I wonder what would happen if someone gave you one of those. The fake burgers, but that they real.
Like the vegan burgers.
But you'd know.
Take one, but you could just smell it and you'd know.
Call it right out. All right, final question here. Karen Kerr asks, can England win the upcoming Euro 2020 football tournament?
Well, you know what it is? It happens every tournament, World Cup, Euro. England fans, we're not going to have much hope going into this, and then it comes around and we're going to win it. So I'm going to jump on the bandwagon and say that. It's coming home.
All right. I love it. Man, it's just so great catching up with you. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me. And today, for the fans out there, we have a little teaser. This coming Monday, there'll be an exciting announcement coming live from Matchroom headquarters. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And we're going to be back tomorrow with Alan the Savage Babbage. So don't miss it. And be sure to like and subscribe to stay up to date with all the latest episodes that drop here on Matchroom Radio. Lewis, thank you. And we'll see you Saturday night.
Thank you very much, Dave.